Welcome to Botches Off-Road. Join us as we talk about everything from gear reviews to trail stories, tent camping to rock climbing, and all things to do with the outdoors. Today is a Northology episode because it's a new month and we have a new magazine to read through. I think we're going to do two articles. They're kind of shorter ones, but and they go together, so it made sense to just do both of them. But I'm pretty sure that we're going to read. Yeah, we'll have time for both. So, how you guys doing?
Doing good.
Oh, we're doing good.
Yeah, Gavin's alive.
Yeah, alive. I had a little heart attack, but ain't gonna stop me.
Yeah, what the hell, dude?
Yeah, I don't know, man. It like I said, it's happened before. I guess I have something wrong with one of my mitral valve or something like that. But yeah, I was just driving and my chest got real tight and my leg got numb and I was like, yeah, I think I'm going to head to the ER. And I went and they measured my troponin or something like that, the levels there, and they were high. And yeah, so that was pretty fun. I haven't been drinking as many Monsters and I'm taking my blood pressure medication now. So I should be alive for a couple more years at least. And yeah.
Yeah. Before we get too on that note,
yeah.
Before we get too far into this, what's everyone drinking tonight? Anything good?
Smart water.
I have the last can of the Baja variety pack for hard.
Oh yeah,
you're still drinking that crap?
It's the last one.
Oh my god, I have had four screwdrivers. And I'm about to open my last spicy beer.
Gross.
They're so good, dude.
Gross.
Blake's Hard Cider, Mango Habanero. They are so good.
Yeah. Definitely an acquired taste that I did not acquire.
Did you even try it?
Yeah. It tasted exactly like Hatch chili, and I was like, nope, done.
Because the ones that you left here had the exact amount that were supposed to be in the variety pack.
Oh, I had two of them. Yeah.
Because there was exactly the right amount. Yeah.
Yeah. I tried the Hatch chili in the other pack that I had, and I was like, yeah, no, I'm good. It reminded me a lot of the Jones Soda Company. They make a Hatch chili soda, and it tastes a lot like that, but with alcohol. And I was like, yeah, I'm good.
It just tastes delicious. I don't know what your problem is.
Yeah, I am.
I've got like right now I'm looking at more than a 6-pack worth of empties on my desk because I'm a slob and haven't cleaned them up.
That's a you problem. That's a you problem. I think you're the only one that likes spicy beer.
Oh, I like it.
You're gross.
Me and Mark together go through a lot of these.
Yes, we do. Gross.
Who else? Jeep Derek liked it. And Brian Sweet likes it.
No.
And Duncan liked it.
Yep.
Yeah, they all lied. They're just being nice to you.
No, it's really good, man. Mm-hmm. Highly recommend to all the listeners out there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, on that note, why don't we start the first article called Winter Overlanding by Jason Fletcher. And the first part starts just like this. Winter overlanding can be a thrilling and rewarding experience, whether you're tackling snowy trails, camping in sub-zero temperatures, or just exploring frosty landscapes. Preparation is key. Here are some essential tips and insights for winter overlanding enthusiasts drawn from the years of experience. And then the first start, it goes, embrace the challenge. Winter transforms ordinary trails into unique challenges. Snow, ice, and freezing temperatures can make even the basic gravel road an adventure. With the right preparation, you can not only survive, but thrive in these conditions. We definitely learned that.
Unless you're in the UP.
Right, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Just don't winter camp in the UP.
Yeah, it's already hard with all the snowmobile trails and stuff anyway. The deep snow is crazy, but we learned that on Poker Run, even with the light amount of snow, it did change the trail conditions considerably.
Oh, yeah.
Even even northern lower peninsula, it's really hard to do it just because there's so, like, camping is fine, but there's so many snowmobile trails.
Yeah, it's really hard. And then, of course, you have the deep snow. I just went out here last week and for like a recovery mission here and got into some really deep, wet snow. And that changed the whole trail, made what easy off camber situations, you start sliding off the side of the trail a little bit and you're like, ooh.
So. We should definitely talk about that real quick. So first off, screw that group for not accepting that lady when she needed help.
Yeah. So originally what had happened is I got up for work one morning and a woman made a post on one of the off-road groups that I'm on and said that her husband and son were stuck and they needed help. And I was a little early. I figured, you know, I was pretty close to them, just judging by the area she was saying. I was like, all right, I'll go out. I mean, you know, couldn't be too bad. And then, so I put the pin in. It turned out it was an hour away. Tried contacting her. Couldn't get her, you know, couldn't get any contact with her. We tried messaging on Facebook. We tried commenting and asking for her. Nothing. But, you know, I kept thinking about the 8-year-old and the kid, you know, stuck, and thought about my kid and was like, you know what, it's worth it more to just go out and make sure. So I headed out and did that, told work I'd be a little late, and everything was pretty easy until I got there. I got on the trail and didn't look like there was much marks, but there's a lot of trails to get to it. So it was a blue trail in the summer, if that helps anybody, on Onyx. And it definitely earned some blue trail in the summer, I guess. It had some good off camber stuff that you guys would have loved. And we got to, I hadn't aired down yet, which was kind of dumb for the trail. It probably needed it. And some of these holes were starting to get kind of big. And I was starting to lose grip a little bit. My tires were spinning. Not super used to the snow in that condition. We had a couple days of it melting and then it kind of snowed again. So it was all just super heavy it was like, I'd say 4 inches at the lowest and 6 to 8 inches. I mean, at the tallest and for snow up there. And yeah, my truck, it felt like it was struggling. I don't actually know if it was, but I felt like I was losing speed. And so I kind of felt the pressure with that and then wanting to be able to even get out to help those people. And I guess I kind of got just a little anxious or something, stopped trusting my instinct and gut, and took a couple of deeper holes than I was supposed to. And then I hit one and I was trying to keep my speed up and had another hole in front of me. It didn't look bad, but I could tell it was the main, you know, like a main deep hole. Yeah. But like I said, I was trying to keep my momentum and the bypass was a real sharp right. And I knew I would slide a little bit and I didn't want to slow down and lose traction. Mm-hmm. So I was like, all right, oh, we're just going to hit it. And boy, it was deep. you guys know on some of these off camber ones that, you know, my hitch scrapes, oh dude, that thing dragged through the dirt. And I went straight down. Some ice was covering water over the hole, and then, you know, refroze. So it was deeper than it actually looked. And I sunk my whole left side up past, you know, just a bit past the floorboards. Could barely open my door. And, you know, I was like, oh, dude, I could get out of here. So I started moving a little bit back and forth. I'm like, yeah, it's not going well. I'm just going to grab my traction boards and try and use that. And then grab my shovel, my traction boards, and my muck boots, which I keep in the truck just in case anything happens. I need winter boots or deep boots. And started kind of digging around the tire. First mistake, plastic snow shovel. Wasn't good for getting solid chunks of ice and snow that was, you know, really wet out from the front of my truck.
So we need to get you a real Pioneer kit.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna buy a new shovel. That's definitely on the list now.
A shovel, an axe, yeah. And I forgot.
I what have the axe. Thing yeah.
What's the third part of a Pioneer kit?
Is pickaxe? It like
a shovel and axe?
Fire starter?
Rope.
No.
Rope.
What? No, is we it? Always put them in a T. Pickaxe, maybe.
That's why I said pickaxe.
Yeah, oh, maybe. I didn't hear that. I'm sorry.
But yeah, no, it was hard. My main issue was my left rear. Everything else was okay. I locked the diff, and that left side just wasn't moving because of how deep that rut is that I ended up sinking into. Mm-hmm. So I dug out the front as best I could, but I couldn't get much over what I had. I only got like 2 inches deep before shovel couldn't do it. And then the rear tire was pretty, pretty clean, the rear side of it. So I dug that out pretty well, threw a traction board under it. And then threw a traction board on the front left one too, because that was the other side that was sunk down a little deeper. And I started to gain a little bit, started creeping back. I was doing okay. And then all of a sudden I just lost all traction. And I get out, I look down, and that hole where I had it all cleaned and dug out was full with water. So there's once that water got in there, the traction board was doing nothing. That was I almost had an instance, and I was super proud. I was going to be like, Alex, the traction board, it finally worked. I tested it. and then nope. As soon as that water poured in there, that traction board, which this is a cheap traction board made out of plastic. They do have some with, they do have some with metal studs in there. That would have helped a lot.
They all work the same.
They work the same, but I feel like if it had something to grab onto, it might've helped better.
Right.
I've
watched so many videos of traction boards, and the only time I've seen people actually get out with them is when they honestly could have got out by rocking their truck.
Yeah. And that's a valid point, but I do think with, you know, how I was stuck, I wasn't getting out by rocking. And I honestly think if I would have been able to dug out the front of the tire, that I would have been able to get out with them, because that side wasn't the part that was filling up with water. It was behind it deeper.
Mm-hmm.
But live and you learn. The traction boards were not working at that point. I put a moving blanket over the traction board to help give the tire a little bit more grip. And it did work a little bit. I got up and out of that like first part, and then sunk back into the hole after I tried pulling out and stopping. I should have just floored it. And I didn't want to rip up my moving blanket, but yeah, that sucked. So
they're like $10.
I know, but I just didn't want to rip it up and like have pieces everywhere. So I ended up sliding back down into that, and then I was like, well, shit. And so kind of sat there and talking with another guy in a West Michigan off-road group, Mike, and he's like, yeah, I got another guy coming out. So I was like, okay, I'll just sit here and look pretty. And little ranger came by and he goes, are you Gavin? I'm like, yep. And he goes, all right, well, I get my kinetic rope out of the back, hook it up to him, hooked it up to my pin. He gave a little tug, and pulled me right out. No problem. So threw everything in the truck and we went down the trail and we're kind of trying to chat up. He goes, tells me on the way, hey, you know, I'm from the area. I know that trail well. He goes, it's pretty interesting in the summer. He goes, there's a pretty good hill climb on that trail. He goes, in the winter, that would be really, really rough. Like in this kind of snow. And I'm like, huh, okay. He goes, I went to the mouth of that trail and there was no tire tracks, no signs that anybody had been on it recently. He goes, so I'm not really sure, you know, the post is at 6 a.m. He goes, I'm not really sure why anyone would be out there on a Monday. And I'm like, yeah, you got a point. And so we chatted it up. Like I said, he explained the trail conditions and stuff. And he goes, you know, we still haven't heard from him. And I'm like, yeah, I think it's not worth risking both of our rigs. And I said, and because no further contact has been made, you know, we should probably call it off. And he goes, well, I'll take my side-by-side down it later if nothing happens, and I'll check it out to just double-check and make sure. I'm like, all right. So as we're as I'm leaving, probably about 30 minutes after I had aired up, cleaned up, put everything back on my truck and left, we get a message with a screenshot saying someone finally got a hold of her, and she goes, oh, no, I posted that like three, what'd she say, like back like 3 or 4 months ago? And she's like, yeah, we'd already gotten help by then. And I was like, oh, well, motherfucker. So it was a glitch in the matrix. Someone was a little slow to approve her and the post. And it was a mistake. You know, I no harm done on my side. You know, I got out. I was fine. Other than some gas money. But, you know, that it's not any big deal. I mean, we obviously in these off-road groups, we try to make sure that people get approved as soon as possible for certain things like that. So on the admins and mods of that group, it's on them a little bit, but you know, I got praise from the group for at least going out and trying, another live and learn for me experience wise in the snow. And then, yeah, so that was a fun, and by the way, I will add right now, if I had a winch, I would have been out of that in a minute. So that further solidified, and Mike, the guy who I was chatting with, was like, you need a winch. And I'm like, I know. So that further solidified that and made me start prioritizing winch stuff, which is a story for another time now.
Man, both of you within the next like 2 months should be sitting on winches.
Yep. Oh, yeah. I've been searching for winch plate mounting brackets for, I mean, months and months and months, and no luck. Everything's, you know, at the least it's like $400 or $500, $600, and the 400 or 500s are kind of iffy, scary. And finally I went on Marketplace, and I've been searching Marketplace forever, but found a Marketplace. There's a guy in Chicago about 3 hours from me, and he had one for $150. Fingers crossed, I'm coming this Sunday to pick it up. And then there's a guy on our Facebook group that's got a winch and everything that he's selling. So hopefully I'll buy that from him, and I will be set up and all good to go.
Yeah, what's Casey looking for out of that? Because that's a Badlands, right?
I think he said 400 with that. That's and solid. And the lead. The lead he said was, I've heard of the lead before. It sounded, do you remember what lead you were talking about the one time that you were looking to get?
It looks like the lead that's on mine.
It's, yeah.
From what I've read, it's the same lead that I'm running on mine right now.
Right. So
my flat link.
Yeah. So, I mean, it would be nice. It definitely would have gotten me out of every stuck situation I've been in so far. So obviously that's always good. So, but so. Now that we talked about my little winter mishap, we'll get back into the article here, and for some key tips for winter overlanding. Winter transforms ordinary trails into unique challenges. Snow, ice, hey, freezing temperatures.
I just found a mistake.
Oh, what?
So they've got embrace the challenge.
Yeah.
And key tips for overlanding, but it's the same chat or paragraph for both of them.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I thought I had read that over again. I thought I was like, whatever. So we'll move down. We'll skip that. We'll go to cold weather gear. Proper gear is the foundation of a successful adventure. Here are some essentials. Diesel heaters, unlike propane heaters, provide warm, dry air without adding condensation. They're efficient, safe, and can keep your tent toasty even in extreme cold. We did have some experience with propane heaters, and while they might be good in a pinch, they are not good all night and long term if you seal everything up. Clothing, invest in quality gear, included insulating pants, wool socks, waterproof boots. Layering is essential for warmth and flexibility. A heated jacket can also be a game changer for staying comfortable around camp.
So I got some things on this one. So for winter clothing, the Army's cold weather system is the cheapest for the money, is the most effective route you could go. You're looking at like $300 tops for all five layers, and you're good down to like negative 20.
And we're talking about the sleeping bag, guys, by the way.
No, I'm talking about clothing.
Oh, are you? I thought you were referring to the sleeping bag. My apologies.
No. The Army's cold weather layer system. I think there's five layers, six if you count the extreme cold weather parka, but you're looking at somewhere between $400 for all of it, and you're good down to like negative 20.
Yeah.
But yes, but the Army sleeping bag, best bang for your buck, cold weather sleeping bag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then we got boots and accessories. Waterproof insulated boots with excellent traction are a must. Don't forget gloves, hats, and extra layers to stay dry and warm, which, yep, that's pretty obvious. And then we...
Hats are really important because you lose something like 80% of your heat out the top of your head.
Right. And if you're bald, it's even worse.
Yes.
not that I'm not pointing anyone out. I'm just saying.
I'm bald, guys. I'm bald. I wear a hat all the time. I am bald. But yeah, and if your hands and feet are getting cold, your actual core body is what's cold, because your body's really smart and it moves that warm blood to the part of your body that is actually cold. So when your fingers start getting white and cold, you actually need to raise your core temperature up, not your extremities. So gloves aren't going to help.
They'll help a little bit, though.
I mean, they do help, but the number one thing is if your core body's cold, your fingers are going to get cold, period. Yeah.
And if you're
you'll feel like first me, there.
Yeah, and if you're like me and you have poor circulation, your fingertips and your toes are the first to go. So vehicle preparation, your vehicle's readiness can make or break your trip. 100% true. Tires, winter and all terrain tires are crucial for traction on snow and ice. Airing down your tires improves grip and can help prevent getting stuck. And that is true for most winter conditions until, I would say deep, deep snow. Then mud kind of helps you a little bit get through that, but.
Yeah, I'd say deep snow with no ice. I do enjoy my mud terrains, but again, we get that once a year.
Yeah,
nine times out of ten, it's maybe deep snow with ice underneath. So yeah.
and when you're prepping for, let's say, tires, be realistic. what is happening in your area or the areas that you're going to travel? And don't get muds just because they look cool, which is fine if you do that, I guess. But yeah, I mean, it might bite you in the ass and later.
I mean, as long as you know how to drive with them, muds aren't the worst thing in the world.
No, they're not worse. But
you just have to understand that you're not going to go fast on ice. Your buddy on all terrains is always going to be able to outpace you on ice.
Oh yeah, we definitely know that. For recovery gear, always carry essentials like D-ring, soft shackles, kinetic ropes, and a winch. These tools can be lifesavers in deep snow and icy conditions. You got safe driving practices. Sorry. Snow can conceal hazards like rocks or stumps. Drive cautiously, especially on unfamiliar trails. Keep trail recovery gear easily accessible and travel with a buddy whenever possible. Mm-hmm. And then, sorry, I had to take a drink of water. Camping comfort. Winter camping is all about staying warm and dry. Drying gear. A diesel heater not only helps keep you warm, but can also help dry wet clothes and boots overnight. Efficient packing. Bring extra clothes, blankets, and emergency supplies. Keep electronics charged and use the day's driving to dry gear out and replenish battery-powered equipment. Also, if you have any battery-powered equipment in your vehicle overnight, just keep it with you in your tent if you can. That'll also help with it from draining. Destinations worth exploring. For Midwest overlanders, Wisconsin and Michigan offer some of the best winter trails. Manistee National Forest in Michigan and, I don't know how to say this one. Nicolet Shequamagon?
Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to get a listener from Wisconsin.
See, Wisconsin, Michigan, because that's a very Michigan name there.
If you took out the CH and put T, I see Tequamanon, so I'm going to go Shequamanon. National Forest and Wisconsin are prime spots for snowy adventures. If you're located elsewhere, look for areas with reliable snow coverage and scenic weather landscapes. And then we get safety first. Winter conditions are unpredictable. Check the weather, stay aware of road conditions, and always err on the side of caution. Driving slowly and remaining vigilant can help you avoid accidents. Travel with friends when possible and ensure your gear is prepared for emergencies. I'll come out and say it.
If you're on winter trails, you should be with people. You should not be alone.
No, I mean, that is the most dangerous trail riding, really, especially if you're doing like a solo camp trip. I mean, solo camp trips are fine, but you need to have, like, I would say you need to have a winch. You need to have a way to get yourself out. I mean, or maybe some kind of emergency contact system like Garmin InReach or something. Or Meshtastic. But if that stuff fails and you're out there alone and you have no way of getting a hold of anybody, man, you better be prepared. So,
yeah,
I do personally, other than normal recovery equipment and stuff, I do carry dry meals, MREs, and I do just keep them in my truck, six or so of them. They're two meals in each bag. If anything ever happened, or if I'm even lazy at camp one day, I'll make one of those, and you have enough to last you a week. So, might be good to have some, spare foods. Obviously, if you're camping, you have stuff to make fires and whatnot, but just some thoughts there. But, final thoughts on the article: winter overlanding opens up a world of possibilities. It's an opportunity to experience nature in a completely different way, away from crowds and the heat of summer. With the right preparation, winter adventures can become some of the most memorable of your overlanding journey.
Can we talk about the fact that the biggest picture in this article shows fall time camping?
Yeah.
Hey, like, what the heck?
What the heck? I mean,
you got to think our winter has been kind of mild depending on what time of year they went.
Yeah, that's true. Our winters have sucked.
Yeah, it's not been the best. What do you guys think? What about article wise? Got anything you'd like to add onto that?
No, I think it's a good article. It's got a lot of good points.
Yeah. I think covered most of the points that I think we would bring up. So,
yeah. Yeah, the next.
I can read this one if you want.
Sure.
This one, she calls it a unpopular opinion, but honestly, I think this should be a popular opinion for everybody. I am going to move this to my other monitor so it's easier to read. 1 second. Where did it go? Too many monitors, guys.
While he's doing that, I'm going to read you guys a little story before this. There's a sign up near Two Hearted Campground, Chris Point Lighthouse in the northern UP, a little ways off of Newberry. And this is what the sign says. At this spot on April 24th, 2015, the Michigan State Police rescued two sisters from Oklahoma and Nebraska who had their SUV stuck in the snow for 13 days. The sisters survived on Girl Scout cookies, Cheetos, and other snack foods that they had with them. So that sign is actually posted on the side of the road up to those Chris Point Two Hearted locations as kind of a reminder for people. The UP is... It's a dangerous place if you're not ready. Oh, yeah. These people, obviously it was into spring and the snow is still pretty dang deep up there. So
I mean, preparation. When you, on average, when you get like 70 to 80 inches of snow in a winter, you can't expect that to go away very fast. I mean, you're looking well into May or April before it's gone.
Yeah. So these sisters were very lucky that they had snacks, and there have been stories of people not doing as well. So, it's a good reminder. It's nice that they put that out. That kind of opened my eyes for me during my little escape trip, as I had mentioned, our radio chatter podcast, that, you know, going up there unprepared, can really lead you into some issues. So,
yeah, that is a very good story to put before this article. So, the article says, unpopular opinion, gatekeeping the UP. Social media groups are full of discussions and accusations of gatekeeping when one party feels like they are not getting traction in their request for locations and trail info. Gatekeeping isn't necessarily bad. It helps ensure that special spots remain clean and taken care of, preserving them for our future. Just look at what happened to Paradise Point near Christmas. An excellent camp area shut down due to the wrong people finding it. State's Derek V of Mitten State Tours.
Yeah.
We recently witnessed a different kind of gatekeeping and discussion in Michigan Overland regarding overlanding and camping in the UP in the winter. This is also kind of gatekeeping we can get behind, and we want to explain why. The Upper Peninsula of Michigan is paradise for off-road enthusiasts when the season is right. However, as winter blankets the region in deep snow, attempting to traverse off-road trails becomes not only impractical, but also potentially dangerous. Mm-hmm. Even experienced off-roaders and locals avoid these trails until after spring melt. If you're considering a winter overland trip in the UP, here's why you should think twice. In the end, this isn't really gatekeeping. It is a fair warning to those unfamiliar with the sort of weather and snow conditions that many just have not experienced. Yeah, because the snow up there gets deep, man.
Yeah, and people don't realize it. There was actually a post about this on MST, and someone was asking about doing an overlanding trip here in the winter up to the UP, and the general consensus by everyone was, hey, don't. There are tons of snowmobile trails. The other trails are extremely deep and dangerous. It's not a place to really overland, and you really need to know what you're doing and have a good plan. You need to make sure the trails aren't being used by snowmobiles. That is an offense that is enforced. So,
and even if you go down a groomed trail that isn't a marked snowmobile trail, it's marked dual use, but it's still groomed. You're not only going to be, you know, not only will it be, it might not be illegal, but the snowmobilers are going to be very pissed off with you.
Oh, yeah.
And the businesses in the area rely on snowmobiles to make their money in the winter. So they're going to get pissed off with you.
Shitty
thing to do.
Yeah. Let alone it's actually dangerous for snowmobilers.
Very much so.
You're digging up, you know, 30 inch ruts in snow, you know, trying to get out of it because you're stuck and then it freezes, or even just later in the day, snowmobilers come hauling ass, which is pretty typical on these snowmobile trails. They're not really looking for trucks and ORVs there. They come hauling ass and hit a 30 inch deep rut. That's a snowmobile death, or severe injury, and it's not worth it. And we've heard of it. So we've heard of it before.
2020, I was out with my father-in-law snowmobiling, and we were just bombing down a trail. We were doing like 35-40 because he follows the law and follows the speed limit. So, I mean, we weren't going fast, but we came up to a spot where a truck had gotten stuck, and my right side ski fell down in the rut and snapped the ski off. And that was a very pricey repair bill.
And lucky.
If I'd been driving the way I drive when I'm not with him, I would have died.
Yeah. And my dad,
I cruise at like 85, 90.
Yeah. Yeah. My dad had a skidoo that he was taking on a trail. There was a hole in the trail. This is around, I think, Bath, Owosso area, but there was a hole in the trail, and he hit that and launched himself and his snowmobile into the tree. And snowmobile hit the tree behind, or hit the tree while he was in front of it, so it crushed him. He broke his tibula. What is that the first part on your main leg? Or is that fibula? Something like that.
The big part or the small?
Yeah, one? The big one.
Oh, I broke the small Emer? One and didn't know it.
He broke that. He broke a bunch of ribs. He broke an arm. He was just lucky that someone found him. Because at that time, cell phones weren't super super popular. There wasn't a lot of that going on, so he was lucky someone found him, and he barely got out of that with his life. So it's important to know and plan, as we said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, snow depth is a game changer. Many people from non-snow regions often don't realize what it means to have literally feet of snow on the ground. Even heavily modified off-road vehicles with 37 or 40-inch tires, front and rear rockers, and experienced drivers struggle to make progress. Snow wheeling is an extreme sport, and it is not for those simply looking to take in the scenery. For overlanders accustomed to dirt roads and scenic backcountry routes, winter in the UP is a whole different level of challenge, one that most are not prepared for. Deep snow, like what you get in the UP, is the one time that mud trains are good in the winter.
Yep. And your Subaru Crosstrek or the rooftop tent, you're stuck immediately.
Why do you have a rooftop tent? First off, why did you put a rooftop tent on a Subaru Crosstrek?
It happens, man. You see it all the time.
There's one that drives around New Wago and drives me nuts. I mean, it's not a small rooftop tent either.
No, is that the one that's on the basket? It's not even on like a good roof rack?
Yeah, and it hangs out like 2 foot on either side of the car, massive. And it hangs out like 3 foot in the front and 2 foot in the back.
It's massive. Yeah, we've
seen that I have not seen this. I want to see it now.
looks so bad.
But you get people that get a Subaru Cross, and you know what? Nothing against you, Subaru guys. You know, we love Subarus for what they are. But
I definitely have stuff against Subarus.
No, shush. But you know, you get guys with these little SUVs that say they're all-wheel drive, and then they're like, "Oh, that means I can go anywhere." And then they throw a rooftop tent on top of their car, and then get stuck, or try to.
It's like an episode of Bluey.
Yeah,
he comes up to a trail. The sign says four-wheel drive. Is our car four-wheel drives? No, our car's all-wheel drives. And how many wheels do we have? Four.
Yeah. That's exactly what they think. And look, you know what? Don't do it. You know, I try to be nice and, you know, to the half glass full kind of guy. But at the end of the day, when we're talking about UP and deep snow like there is, not uncommon for them to have 3 feet of snow. You know, it's you're stuck. So, yeah, I mean.
Yeah. According to Visit Keweenaw, the Keweenaw Snow Gauge is an iconic destination for travelers visiting the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. This life-size snow gauge shows the Keweenaw's record snowfall that was set during the winter of 78 to 79, the blizzard of 78. Go figure. Mm-hmm. During that winter, the Keweenaw received 390.4 inches of snow between November and April.
Yeah.
In contrast, so I know Mark knows where this is, but Gavin doesn't. So do you know when you're going to my dad's house, Mark, how you go down that hill and then up to his house? There's like that little valley right there.
Yep.
So in the winter of 78, that valley drifted over and just looked like a straight road.
Oh.
So that's like, 30 foot high there, roughly?
Yeah. Roughly
30 or 40 feet high.
Mm-hmm.
That's how much snow we're talking in the winter of 78. Like it was, we've never seen a blizzard like that in our lifetime.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're talking about 2 feet in a night or less or more, you know, it was,
they got 7 feet in like 3 hours in the blizzard of 78.
Yeah.
here in Grant anyway, up in the UP,
way more.
Yeah.
Physics and weather matter. Even if some trails technically allow access, winter conditions dictate what is actually possible. This deep snow, changing temperatures, and unpredictable storms can quickly turn an off-road adventure into a rescue situation. Soft snow can swallow vehicles whole, and self-recovery becomes nearly impossible without the right equipment and experience. When winter takes hold, it's not about what's legal, it's about what's physically possible, and weather always wins. Very much so. I mean, winter is for snowmobiles. Snowmobiling is a major contributor to local economies, and clubs invest significant time and money into keeping those routes in top shape. When off-roaders attempt to push through, even if they're just crossing a snowmobile trail, they risk damaging trails that aren't meant for vehicle traffic. This can create dangerous conditions and disrupt an industry that many local businesses rely on to get through the winter.
As we were talking about earlier.
Oh, yeah. My coworker went up, bought a house up there in the UP. They went to go out and eat dinner. Every bar was filled with snowmobiles. I think they gave up trying to find somewhere to eat for how busy they were.
Oh, yeah. People travel from other states to come up here.
Yeah.
And it's an every weekend thing.
Every weekend, every week, all day. It's
24/7. I lived in Kalkaska, which gets a pretty fair amount of snow, which is still in the lower peninsula. Kalkaska and the trails around that area, which is the same kind of Cadillac, area we were talking about, has significant snowmobile trails around there. I mean, it's every weekend, everything's packed with snowmobilers. The motels are packed. It's a major, major source of income for some of these people up there. And sometimes it keeps them afloat so that they can survive. Yeah. So this vehicle traffic, the driving off roads, it really does impact more than just you.
Mm-hmm. Right. Even locals stay off the trails. If the people who live in the UP avoid these trails in the winter, that should say something. Even those familiar with the terrain and accustomed to harsh conditions wait until after the spring melt before venturing back into the backcountry when locals... Oh, I forgot a period there. I'm so sorry, guys. Before venturing back into the backcountry. When locals who know the trails better than anyone choose to stay off them, it's a clear sign that winter wheeling in the UP just isn't a good idea.
Yep.
The verdict. Stay off the trails until spring. While winter off-roading may seem like an exciting challenge, in the reality of the UP's extreme conditions makes it a bad idea. For even the most experienced snow wheelers with highly capable rigs. For those looking for winter adventure, there are plenty of safer, more reasonable ways to enjoy the season. From snowmobiling to snowshoeing or simply taking in the stunning winter landscapes from an accessible route. The best time for overlanding in the UP is after the snow has melted, when the trails are open, safe, and ready for exploration.
Well said. Well said.
Yep.
Round of applause. It's a good article.
Very much so.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, like the title says, it's not necessarily gatekeeping as it is a warning.
Yep.
Nobody wants you up there right then. I know you want to do what you want to do, but people don't picture the amount of snow we get. We get like Colorado mountain type snow.
The UP definitely tops Colorado mountains in snow.
Right. I mean, it's
like double the depth.
It's significant. I mean, you got to think we have lakes surrounding us. We get in Michigan what's called lake effect weather, where the lakes are so big that they actually affect the amount of snow that we get.
Generate more snow. Yeah.
Right. So the whole left band of Michigan is under lake effect. The what is it? New York. That area that gets affected by Buffalo area. You ever hear about all the crazy snow that they get over there? That's a major contributor from the lakes.
Oh yeah.
So you have to think about that. That the more north you go into Michigan, the deeper the snow. And that's pretty common. So if you want to do some snow overlanding, snow wheeling, stuff like that.
Do it in lower Michigan.
Yeah, try it in lower Michigan. Try around where we're at. The Everett area is really beautiful. Cadillac, if you know where you're driving, like I said, there's a lot of snowmobile trails around that area. But if you plan it out well, talk to locals in the area, make sure you know what's going on. That can be a very beautiful area to go to.
Yeah, Cadillac. I don't know. I feel like Cadillac, maybe even ever. It depends. If it's really deep snow, honestly, just stay away. Like, I love snow wheeling.
Oh, yeah.
I really love driving in deep snow, but I'm also a snowmobiler, and I know how pissed I get when someone's torn up the trail.
Yeah, like I said, it comes down to a lot of planning, but Michigan snowmobile trails are, like we already said, a large income source for people in the area. And you
pretty much White Cloud North is
wintertime. Grand Rapids
it's
North,
very heavy.
Yep.
After White Cloud, it's really heavily dependent on snowmobilers for income for the rest of the year.
Right. So, yeah, it was a good article, man. Thanks to Northology and Cindy Pope up there. We really do appreciate the she gives us a little shout out where we like to read her articles. Gives us a good topic to kind of go off of, something that we don't always think about all the time. Yep. And it's
so a lot of fun. We still got 15 minutes. So my question is, Mark, what did you do off road last week?
Last week,
we know what Gavin did.
Yeah. I think the only
thing off road that we did was rotate my tires.
I was about to say, all we did was go hang out with Derek.
Yeah.
Jeep Derek.
I would say, yeah, I still have a shake. I don't know what it is. I'm I'm really over it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's it. Oh, and we planned out your new bumpers. You want to talk about your new bumper?
Oh, yeah. So I've been trying to figure out for a while. My issue has been with my current bumper and most bumpers for a Tacoma is there's a subframe. I don't remember what it's technically called, but
I think it's your core support.
I don't think it is. All it does is hold up the skid plate.
Oh, I thought it holds up the radiator.
No.
Oh, okay.
Because I can cut it off and it doesn't affect the radiator. In the newer, the third gens, it does provide some support for like your power steering lines.
Gotcha. Okay.
Because in the new, that company, when they, so what I'm going to do is get a I forget the name of the bumper. Anyways, I'm getting a bumper for C4. It essentially, you get a skid plate relocation where you raise the skid plate up, so it's actually more of a actual leveled surface and not just a weird chin underneath the bumper like most bumpers are.
So it can actually direct rocks down your bumper and then under you rather than down your bumper and then into the skid plate mount?
Yes. Yeah. Rock crawler is a bumper. I was trying to remember what it was.
Yeah.
Anyways, so essentially, I'm going to get the bumper and then the relocation delete of the cross member raises it up, and then it'll reinforce, have a reinforcement bracket, which will keep from the bumper being pulled out like it did the last time.
Yeah, because your bumper, we pulled it out, what? It's a good 2 or 3 inches that it's pulled out right now.
Yes.
It's pulled out and right it's twisted not his frame. It bent the frame horn at the end just a little bit.
Yep.
Yeah, that was crazy. He was pretty stuck though.
Yes. It's not just from that event. Like,
no, it was from multiple times.
I've been commenting on it doing something weird for a while now because one side of his bumper wasn't touching his grill and headlight, and the other side was. Mm. So I knew it was twisted. I just couldn't figure out why.
Yep. But what does not help is that the clevis holding area, the clevis holes, is literally above the actual frame rails.
So instead of using the frame, instead of using the frame for support, it bends down or up off on the frame.
Yep.
Yeah. It's bad engineers. Bad.
But that's like most of the bumpers. Like, I've gone through and looked at them. A lot of them fixed it by reinforcing that, but you look at a lot of the bumpers, they're not meant for actual off-roading like they're supposed to.
Ooh,
I just think it's a bad... Go ahead, sorry.
Oh, no, you're good. Keep going, because mine's off topic.
I just think it's a bad... I almost want to say it's a bad design on Toyota's part, because they didn't give a good spot to connect a bumper. Like, no matter what way you look at it, that spot is not great for adding an off-road bumper.
I mean, considering, I think, any Tacoma newer than... or 2005 and newer, all plastic bumpers begin with.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, so's... even Devin's 01, it has like a hybrid metal and plastic bumper.
I'm about to say, yeah. I sure remember if that one was a mix or not.
I just know 05 from up is pretty much plastic bumpers.
That's an off-roady thing I did. My little brother bought a truck. Yay. And I got to go with him to pick it up. Woo. It is the world's rustiest 2002 Tacoma.
There you go.
Looks like hell. It's a crew cab short bed. The frame is literally one giant patch from front to back, but it runs good. And for $3,500, I don't think he could beat it.
No, that's good. I, let's see. Upcoming news for me. I have a, going to get my winch plate from Chicago here Sunday. I have a run, up in Gladwin Saturday. There's an MST. MST one. Event. Yeah, there's two of them actually going on. There's a Bronco run, MST event run, and Mike invited me to the Bronco run. So I was gonna go to Nolan's. He's a member of the MST. He's got a little open house or housewarming party. Was gonna go to that, but with the kid having RSV. We're gonna try to stay away from people, and we're gonna do that run instead, probably Saturday. Hope and pray I don't break anything.
I'm pretty happy for Nolan. His life seems to be turning around pretty good.
Heck yeah, man.
He's also a no agenda douchebag, so I have a really deep connection with him.
He's a good guy. He's a good guy. And I met him on MST on one of the trail rides. He's got a kid, and you know, we bonded pretty good. You know, there's a lot of good people out here that do off-roading that have kids, and it's always nice to see someone else doing it too. But
and his Avalanche is it's obviously capable, because he spends all his time in End of the World, and that's like the most hardcore mudding you can do in our area. So.
Oh yeah. If anybody knows Nolan, they know that he likes his mud puddles. He swerves for them while we all swerve around him.
He's Swamp Team East, and me and Mark are Swamp Team West.
Yep. They are. I don't like to participate in swamp meets, but
I've seen you in some pretty swampy shit, though.
Yeah, you know what? I seem to be getting myself into more issues lately. I don't know if I'm just getting cocky or you guys are bad influences.
I think that you got a little bit of confidence, and now you think that you're unstoppable.
Yeah, well, I know. I was humbled. I know I'm not unstoppable. But
that was me. That was me back in May before I, you know, sunk my truck in Drummond Island.
Yeah, no, I'm not even chancing that. But I did want to bring up something to you guys. Just want one thank you to the to listeners. We really appreciate you guys listening in on our podcast. We know it's still a work in progress, and it's getting better every episode. But I did want to do a little thank you. I don't know if you guys noticed this, but we have 61 downloads on one of our radio chatter episode. What's your favorite mod to your rig? So that's the highest amount of downloads that we've had on any of our episodes yet. It's pretty exciting to see us up there at least. And you know,
it's not just that one. Like, we have a lot of episodes in the last month that are like over 40.
Yeah. Yeah. We're starting to pick up a little bit. In the last 30 days, we've had 342, which is 77% up from the last month. So,
and I was on Snail Trail, So
Snail Trail, yeah.
Clearly we're doing something.
Yeah, I mean, we've had a couple guys like Benji Ward, Cindy Pope, Traveling with Cars or
Shooting Cars?
Shooting cars. Yep, sorry. But we've had some, honestly, for this just beginning a podcast, we've had some really good guests already. So it's exciting to see that this is starting to pay off. We're starting to gain a little bit of traction. We're seeing people download from other countries. A crazy amount of spread that we're getting in that area. But
this is when we find out that all the downloads are actually bots and the internet's dead and we're just the only ones pumping real content in.
Oh man. Yeah, no, I mean, it's cool. I mean, we got most of our downloads obviously from America. But we got some speckled around, man. It's cool to see it in other countries. We just want to thank you guys, man. Thanks for listening, putting up with us, sure. being dumb or rambling, and stick with it.
And thanks for listening to me get drunk almost every single Wednesday, whether you realize it or not.
Yeah. You might realize it.
This episode they may. I am pretty sloshed.
Oh gosh. So I had to go and take a break because I've been drinking water like crazy, but. That's like it's going out of style. All of a sudden, when you drink a lot of water, you have to pee a lot, and it's kind of dumb, honestly.
I purposely have not broken the seal, but I gotta pee so bad. But I know once I do, I won't stop.
Yeah, bro. Hey, well, that's maybe we should go let you go pee then.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for joining me, guys. Yep. This was a really good episode.
Yep, and we appreciate you guys listening in.
I'm just curious who listens all the way to the end. So if you listen all the way to the end, either write into our Facebook group or boost in and let me know. And maybe I'll send you a sticker or something. I don't know. But yeah, just let me know if you listened all the way to the end and we'll see what happens.